What's up, everybody? This is Matt.
This is Nathan.
And this week we're doing something a little bit different. Audio will quite be up to snuff of last week, but we have a good excuse this time around. And it's not because I'm an idiot.
Check me out.
Oh, shit. We are actually driving down the highway right now in Nate's F-250. And we are trailering Bruce's big turbo E90-335. So we decided we're going to podcast on the road this week while we take this E90 back home, back over to the Dayton area.
Yep.
So shout out to all my Daytonites. But yeah, we figured this week we're just going to kind of do a fun episode. No real main topic, kind of a housekeeping podcast episode, talking about what we're doing, what we're working on. I know Nate's working on something really fun, so I'm going to let him just run right away with that.
Yeah, just working on Bruce's 335. Just got it buttoned up, big single turbo kit. Speed Tech, I don't know if it's real mainstream or how popular they are, but it seems to be a really, really nice comprehensive kit. You can follow along actually on YouTube. I've done the video kind of going along as I'm doing the unboxing of the kit, tearing the car apart, putting the big single on, get rid of the stock twins. Just got it buttoned up pretty much last night and getting ready to take it back to him now.
So what about Eddie Lightning?
Oh, Eddie Lightning.
We have not dropped hints of Eddie Lightning yet on this podcast, but today is the day.
Yep, I've done a little bit of video shooting on it. Actually talk about it in the latest BMW videos that I started to take, but it is a 1996 Eddie Bauer F-150. It is two-wheel drive, extended cab, short bed. It is dubbed the Eddie Lightning because we're going to take inspiration from the first-gen Lightnings of the era and kind of run with that, do some more modern touches. It won't have the 351 in it like the Lightning did. It has a 5-liter. Probably do modifications somewhere along the lines of what you would see in like a Fox Body Mustang, you know, engine-wise, intake. It is a mass air engine, so that definitely helps. I could do a cam upgrade. Not really worried about the heads, do GT40P heads, maybe do like an Explorer intake or something like that. Just little things like that. It's got a little bit of rust, which isn't horrible. I actually filmed it in the videos. They make patch panels for it for like under $100.
Oh, damn.
So, I mean, you'll have a lot more in time invested in cutting and welding and bodywork and grinding and, you know, getting it all lined out. But as far as the actual patch panels, I literally think it was like $100 from Summit for the cab corners and the bedside. So
that ain't bad at all.
No.
I think this truck would be perfect. Number one, yeah, the GT40P stuff's pretty awesome. You know, my SN95 I had back in high school that had the bashed inside on it.
Yeah,
I had the GT40P stuff on it, and that car ran real well. That would be the perfect truck to find somebody who was doing a part out or upgrading to a Pro Charger and has one of the old Paxton setups on it. I don't know why, but like just an 8 to 10 PSI Paxton setup on that truck would be so much fun.
Yeah, ideally to go forced induction would be, you know, that would be the goal for it.
Cheap to do on a 5.0, honestly.
Yeah, that, and you don't want to go too overboard with the stock block anyways. Just
right.
Because of the, you know, it would still make it completely fun because that thing with the 5-liter that's down a cylinder in it and running like crap still feels kind of peppy in that truck versus, you know, the bigger, heavier, full-size trucks like what we're riding in now. So,
right.
I mean, even that truck with 400 horse would probably, that would be a heck of a lot of fun.
Oh, it would fly, honestly. And Yeah, you know, if you did get the bug real bad, and it's like, I'm at 400 and I want more. I know listeners of this podcast would be quick to point out, and they are kind of hard to find, but the Mexico blocks were supposed to be pretty damn strong. The Mexico 5.0s?
I'm pretty sure that's what it should be in it. It could be the triple X block was the Mexico block.
Yeah.
Triple Y, I don't remember. I think that was a Windsor block.
But no,
they were definitely... a little bit sturdier, the triple X block. I think it was something in the metallurgy was a little bit different.
That, and I do believe, weren't the mains a little bit different, too, on the Mexico block?
It's been forever since I've looked into it, but I know that...
I know the metallurgy is definitely stronger, for sure.
I've actually got a triple X block in there in the garage, but it doesn't have any main caps or anything like that. I just have a bunch of money in, you know, getting main caps back on and getting it line board and everything, so.
We apologize if any of the harshness is coming through. It is a driving podcast. We are lifted on like 36s on this thing.
37s.
There we go. 37s, see?
And 22, so it rides like complete crap.
It does ride very equivalent to my semi I drive. It's not horrible by any means, but it's right on par with like a day cab.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But yeah,
football going past.
Oh shit, STI wagon. I've always called those the football. But Eddie Lightning is one of my favorite like project ideas out there, just because a lot like the Mirage, who's doing this?
Right.
You know?
It's an OBS Ford, old body style. Most of your people are, you know, like coming swapping them or doing newer power strokes in them, building them, lifting them up, where this one's going to kind of take a different approach. Only two-wheel drive, maybe do a little bit better limited slip in it and go with a more, not a stance, you know, kind of look, but more of a beefy tire on it on a 17-inch wheel that just kind of, if you look up a Lightning, they actually... In the early 90s, well, mid-90s, they were actually factory with 17s on them, so it was kind of neat.
Oh, no shit.
If I could find a set of those wheels, I would. If not, maybe find something inspired by those wheels or just something that's a 17, because I know the size tire that I want to go, you know, that I want for it, because that look is just killer on those trucks. Lower it down just perfect. Not to where it's tucking, but, you know, just... right at the point of get the tire flush with the fender, pretty much.
Kind of like how we did my Mazda.
Like a beefy, aggressive look, yeah.
Right. No, shoot, I like that a lot. I love sport trucks. I like it. I love that about my Mazda build, just how you can take it from just this mundane vehicle to, like, oh, that's pretty cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was one of my favorite little builds we had done on any of my vehicles, was just cranking the torsion bars in the front and throwing the lowering blocks in the back, and honestly, how much that changed the handling of the vehicle.
Yep, it sure did.
So much fun to do that.
It'll be kind of the same, you know, right along the same lines. Maybe, I don't know the exact suspension setup on it. I haven't looked into it a whole lot, but if it needs, you know, lowering springs or drop spindles, something like that, I'd probably do that in the front. And then if it probably, like a flip kit to flip the axle on top of the leaf springs, that might be too low for what I want to do, but find maybe some leaf springs or...
You could always do lowering blocks if need be.
Yeah, and that would be if you flip it on top of the leaf springs, because I'm pretty sure this axle's under the leaf spring.
Yeah, I know a lot of people invert them to lift them like on Blazers.
Right. Go along those lines. The interior is fairly decent on it. Maybe try and find some Lightning-inspired pieces, or maybe even get some custom seat covers that are embroidered with any Lightning, just to set it apart. And I was even thinking about doing Lightning-style badges,
How
they have on the bedside, but make it say Eddie Lightning, just because it's obscure and it would fit in with, like, the really popular Radwood era stuff right now, but it would still kind of have a modern touch. Just people to me don't do stuff like that, and that's just kind of the style that I have. Take something, in this instance, that was given to me because it didn't run very well and it's just in the way, and put minimal effort, or not minimal effort, maximum effort, what I can, but minimum, you know, money and funds, and still make it very appealing and awesome just to drive and gain attention in it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the fun of a build like that, is just putting your own twist on it and still encompassing what the best model of it could, you know, could have been, and just kind of playing homage on it with your own taste.
Right.
Like, I like the idea of the seat covers. I'd be willing to bet Kaskin probably does those.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that'd be pretty cool, full leather with like the Eddie Lightning, you know, homage.
It still has like the tan interior where the Lightnings had the gray. They had
right.
like a gray cloth and like a gray, dark gray, charcoal black almost. So it'll still be Eddie Bauer on the inside, but more Lightning on the outside.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean,
kind of clash them together. I think it'll be pretty neat.
Not only that, it'd be a really fun driver. I mean, you could really just eat up miles with that thing and just have a blast doing it, honestly.
Yeah.
Have the utility of a bed, and yeah, I mean, shoot, I don't see any downside to that at all.
Right. No, it'll be fun for sure.
Yeah, as far as mine, we're taking the, like we said, taking the E90 on down to the Dayton area, and when we get back, we are actually fucking with the Mirage some more. Readers of the website will see that Nathan absolutely went into boss mode last weekend, and from scratch, with no measurements initially, we took measurements, and we collaborated amongst me, Nathan, and our good friend Casey, and we literally, taking out the driving to Summit Racing, which is all the way across the state and back, taking that out, we had fabbed from scratch a chromoly strut bar in probably about 5 hours, and it turned out really awesome. Since then, I know I've been doing a lot of research on like tube fab, and I've been going down this crazy rabbit hole. And tonight we're actually going to be fabricating a rear torsion bar for the Mirage out of chromoly. Going solid on this one to really get some rigidity back there. Mirage uses a twist beam suspension just like the Velosters do, and I remember when we put that torsion bar on the Veloster, it just totally changed how that car acted. So we're just kind of making our own, you know, Renegade Performance, fabricating.
Yep.
So super excited about that.
Everything that we do on the Mirage, fab wise like that, we will make a jig as well, so that way we can, you know, replicate them fairly easy.
Oh yeah, the Mirage community has been, you know, definitely taking notice. We actually did sell a, you know, strut bar based on the one that's in my car, and a lot of people were wanting these torsion bars because, you know, only one person really ever offered them, and they had some issues out of them, so we're kind of overbuilding ours, and I'll be torture testing it throughout the week for sure, but I have a feeling it's going to hold up real nice.
Yeah, and if not, that's for sure a good time to learn is, you know.
Yes, exactly.
R&D.
So yeah, pretty much anything that happens on the Mirage, I mean, we have to build it. Nobody is supporting this chassis yet, so I mean, it's us, you know, we're kind of the ones doing it, so we're also doing some aero mods on it. Got some carbon fiber front canards going on the bumper, and got some rear diffusers, the actual, like, exit diffusers that allow the air out of the back bumper that are ironically meant for a 1G DSM. So, yeah, shout out to JM Fab for a heck of a product. It's a very nice looking product. I was very impressed with the quality of them. And shout out to Extreme PSI for getting those to me in 2 days, literally with economy shipping. Two days I had them.
Plus,
I was like, what?
I've learned from experiences that they may not always be the cheapest, but they will get you what you need ASAP, usually at most 2 days.
Oh yeah, I will always support Extreme PSI for sure. Any of our DSMers listening, you know, if you want a place to buy some DSM stuff, support Extreme PSI. They're awesome. Their customer service is killer. I was real happy. Came boxed real nice. And just awesome in my opinion.
Yep.
So yeah, we're doing the diffusers, the front canards this weekend. Yeah. And it gets a little crazier from this weekend.
I've never seen a new Freightliner cab over.
Yeah, that was a new cab over like you'd see in Europe going through Paris or something. But yeah, I did kind of bite the bullet, and I bought some AeroCatch locking aero mount hood pins. I'm going to be removing the factory actual hood mechanism and all that. Number one, to cut down on weight. Number two, well, they look awesome. I'm just going to say I like the look, so I'm doing it. And we're also going to be cutting the hood. Yes, the hood of my car is in perfectly fine shape.
Four holes.
But it's about to get four holes because, yeah, two for the aero catches. And then I'm going to be buying some APR carbon fiber extractor vents that are 100% functional. So, looking to get some heat out of the bay, especially as it's going to go boosted.
I'm going to go that way, but this road takes a
second. So, yeah, she's going to get the hood vents, which, you know, I've kind of mocked it up in my mind. They're going to look pretty dope, especially with the aero catches, you know, on the very front of the hood.
Yes.
I kind of splurged yesterday. I've been wanting to start working on the interior, and, nobody's done it yet, but it seems, based on my research, that a 1G DSM steering wheel hub adapter fits a new Mirage, so we are going to find out next weekend. I'll have all the parts Monday, but I bought an NRG short hub, a quick release, the 2.0 version, and I kind of went a little hard in the paint, and I bought an OMP, the actual Ferrari Challenge wheel put into the F430s.
That's just straight baller.
I fucking wanted it. I mean, honestly, there was a Sebelt wheel I really wanted, and it's actually the one put into Porsche Cup cars, but it was suede, and I knew that I'm a sweaty, sweaty bastard, and I'm like, that will look like shit inside 2 months. And I can't spend $339 to know I'm going to destroy it.
Right.
So, rather than destroy a beautiful piece of art, I bought a smooth leather Ferrari Challenge wheel with the yellow tape for the centering line, and it's anodized black spoke. For anybody who wants to check it out or might be interested, it's part number 1976N in OMP's catalog. Just a good old 6x70 bolt, bolts up to any of the commercially available hub adapters and quick releases. Pretty damn dope. You can get it on Amazon. I actually bought the last one, but they'll probably get one back in stock. If not, Pegasus sells them for right at $300. So I went with that because it's 300mm. My stock wheels are right at 340. And for anybody who might be wondering, well, why would you undersize your wheel? Well, you have to ask yourself, how does your car feel and how do you want it to feel? If your steering's real loose, you know, I'll throw out like the BMW F30. The Mirages is pretty loose because it's just over-assisted. If you undersize your wheel, you got to put a little bit more effort into turning it. So it's kind of a lot like, you know, cutting some of your power assist out of it, just using mechanical engineering to do
leverage.
It. Exactly.
Yeah, leverage.
And, of course, that does not change your lock-to-lock because that's all, you know, indicated by your steering ratio. So you're not affecting your lock-to-lock turns. You're just affecting the input you need to give to turn the car. And I like tighter steering. I've always really liked the E46 M3, the E90s. Those are nice and tight, and I think this will give me that. Now, conversely, if you have a DSM and you're like me and you deleted all the power steering, I would probably upsize the wheel 10 or 20 mils to help negate some of that. I know our good friend John was talking about that, and that's what I suggested. Like a 350 would probably be perfect for a 1G with no power steering. But also, the cockpit of my car is tight. It's a small car. It's going to be getting some Sebelt GT3 cup car seats in it. So entrance and exit will become a little bit more cumbersome, and with a smaller wheel and a quick release, it'll just make my life way easier. It's like any build, you know, you got to think about where you're taking it, and you don't, I mean, I'm okay with compromising, but you don't want to make your life hell just to do it.
Right.
If you think it out, kind of like I have been doing, yeah, you can have a dual purpose car that won't necessarily be the most annoying thing in the world. So yeah, you know, a lot of people have asked, what are you kind of doing with it? Over winter, I talked with a salvage yard out where I'm at in Ohio, and they do have a Mantran swap, and I think I'm going to nab it, work on doing the manual swap, pulling the interior out to get ready to do a wiring harness like for the Haltech. And yeah, Nathan and I have been discussing seam welding the chassis on the car, which is, you know, just a trick used by rally car people who build rally cars, race cars, basically just solidifying all the stock spot welds and just making one basically congruent piece of metal that doesn't have any weak spots in it.
Yep.
You know, once you throw a set of Advans on your car, the sticky tires and the suspension, inevitably something will give if it's not strong.
I was thinking too, it was actually pretty neat what I saw at Harbor Freight. They actually have spot welders where you can literally go down all your pinch welds, and you can actually, you know, do way more spot welds than what normally has, and they're fairly inexpensive.
That would be pretty sweet. I mean, that's just an extra step a lot of people just don't take, you know, especially going over your pinch welds.
Mm-hmm.
When you're seam welding, essentially, it's just as the name implies, you're just welding all the seams of the car. Obviously, that's a big thing in rally, because they're jumping these things, and you don't want flexion when that's going on.
No.
So, yeah, we are going to take it pretty far. I'm not trying to give the car a million horsepower by any means. As I've said, 150 on a stock engine and about 240 on a build engine. I want this car to earn its stripes because of its chassis.
It says, do not enter, but it has a stop sign up there.
Yeah, that
I keep missing turns.
That makes no sense. You could have jumped on 75.
I don't want to go that far out of the way.
Or you could have took 23 and took that to 42 to 70.
This way is actually the most direct route. This road will literally take us to, like, Bruce's street. I'm just trying to get there. I just keep
missing. Yeah, that's kind of the project updates in the Mirage. Manual swap. I do want to go Haltech because they support MyVec, and it is a double-cam MyVec car. Then, obviously, just really quality parts that all play together. I did throw a deposit on a set of coilovers, so shout out to BC Coilovers.
Yes.
If they manufacture coilovers for your car, chances are, if you sweet talk them, they will allow you to adjust your spring rates. You're going to pay more for it, but I have worked with them. I'm buying a set of DS series that have progressive valves, and they're going to valve them to my predetermined spring rate. I'll have those in about 6 weeks. So, a lot of people have taken interest in this project, so I just wanted to kind of take a moment to throw an update out there. That is what's going on. I've been asked probably 5 or 6 times now, are you going to cage this car? And the answer to that is most likely yes. I'll probably buy like a beater Camry to really truly start dailying with like my kid around and stuff, but yeah, I do have a feeling we'll probably end up doing a chrome alloy cage in it. I mean, if I'm gonna go that hard, I might as well go all the way.
Right.
I mean, how many people are jumping in a 2017 Mirage with a cage in it, seam welded?
Are you gonna try and retain some of the interior, or?
I do want to actually keep the full back interior and everything in it, yeah. I mean, because at that point, I can still throw my kid in it, and I want to kind of design the cage to make it a little bit rear seat friendly, but yeah, I do want to keep the back seats. A Mirage member of the forums, he weighed all his back seat stuff. There's about 50 pounds there you can pull out, but I can make that up with a lightweight battery and a couple tubular crash supports. So
right.
Just for bragging rights, I want to say, yeah, I do have the full interior. It's here. And I'd like to have the car weighing about 1850 with the turbo system on it. Obviously, without me in the car.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of a lot of it. You know, we're going to be working on corner balance in the car. I mean, pretty much any of the racing techniques you'll read about on Grassroots Motorsports or Pegasus, we tend to implement as many of those as possible using what we have at home. I actually have found a pretty trick set of corner balance scales for like $750. I am going to be buying those the first of the year. So for anybody down the road who may want to corner weight their car or corner balance, that is something we would be able to do. I figure, well, $750, if a couple people need corner weights, you know, we can charge a small fee to do it. And I mean, there's not a lot of people in Ohio doing it, so.
Right. Just throw her up on the lift, adjust your spring rates. And
exactly.
Slap it back on the scale, do as you need.
Yeah, so, I mean, we kind of want to be able to tackle any type of build, mild to wild. To me, it's just cool to say, yeah, we do all this, but we can also, you know, get your corner weights for you.
Yep.
Because I see that question a lot. You know, how do I weigh my car? How do I know my splits? The only really good way to do it is with the set of these scales, and they're actually accurate down to a tenth of a percent. So that's pretty cool, and they'll weigh all the way up to 6,000. So sorry, Challenger owners. But no, pretty cool stuff. I've really gotten heavily immersed into the rabbit hole of setting up a race car, the fabrication of some of these metals. It's something I've enjoyed learning about a lot. There's still so much to learn, but I can't wait to just dive right into it. You know, I can weld a little bit. Nathan's an extremely good welder, so I'm going to have to start practicing. Because, yeah, I'd love to be able to jump in and do some of this as well and just not be afraid to fall on my face doing it. So,
yep.
The only way you're going to do it is by doing it.
Exactly.
So that's me. That's the Mirage project. It's gotten a whole lot of interest. I think it's cool. I'm glad people are enjoying what I'm trying to do with it. I'm just trying to make it a very fun build I can enjoy, something I can look back on, you know, once the car is done and say, you know, this car handled so bad when I first got it. It was slow, and now look at it. But still be pretty enough to where if I pulled up to a show, you know, people can appreciate what we've done with
it. Yeah, just like you were saying earlier, go, you know, do it good enough right off the bat and clean and simple, and, you know, you'll have a functional car that you could take to SEMA if you get your sponsors and everything like that. That would be awesome.
That is a big goal of mine. You know, I've always wanted to not only just attend SEMA, but it's always been like a dream to take a car and actually be able to showcase it. And for me, if I was ever to build a car that I was going to take to SEMA, there's been two cars I've owned that I, you know, I just see it in it, and that would have been my Veloster or this Mirage, just because you can walk all around SEMA and you will not see another Mirage.
The only one.
Yeah, it will
that
undoubtedly be the only one.
That is the goal. Ever since I did my driving kind of vlog or whatever, I guess you would say vlog, that's when I first said where I was going to actually, my main goal for my laser is to take it to SEMA. I don't know what I'm going to have to do. I know about roundabouts, you know, getting in with sponsors and, you know, if you're using parts from someone to be, I don't even necessarily have to be featured, but if I can get the car there with the help of a sponsor or something like that, that is the plan though. It's, I don't care what I have to do or how long it takes, but that is the end goal for that car, is to build it how I want and to showcase it at SEMA.
I would love that. I mean, it would be awesome for us to build both of our cars and just take them up together. I mean, how cool would that be?
Yep.
They're both technically Mitsubishi products, which they are. And just, you know, there's a 27-year age gap there between them. That would be fucking amazing, you know. This 4G63-powered laser and this 3A92 Mirage. Just, there was a time those two cars were sold side by side. Literally, there was a time you could buy an Eclipse or a Mirage right off the same showroom. So how cool is that?
Speaks so much to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we obviously love our Mitsus, and that is a big part of the reason. You know, I get that question a lot. It's such an unsupported platform. It's a three-cylinder. Why would you do it? Well, there was a time when people were fucking with DSMs. That's just a four-cylinder. Why would you do it? Well, that's why. You'll never know what a platform can do until you do it.
Right.
Somebody has got to be the first, and I guess it's going to be us. I love the car. I love Mitsubishi's products. Yeah, they don't build any inspiring cars anymore, but I will take it and make it what it should have been.
Better than the Eclipse Cross.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't dump money into that. But the Mirage at least has the name. It is a very lightweight car. And I think that little engine can make some power. The cylinder head is suspiciously identical to a 63, you know, 4G63 with the cylinder missing. Makes me think they will swallow boost real nicely. I can't wait to find out.
Oh, yeah.
And if anybody has any projects that,
Eclipse, dude,
you know, they maybe want to show off or, like, need some guidance on, shoot, by all means, send it over and let us check it out. I actually just wrote a piece on the Mirage and threw it on the website last night. And, you know, it was one of my ending paragraphs, you know. Don't be afraid to show us your projects. It doesn't matter what you're working on. You could be building a old CRX, a 92 Accord you're doing a homemade turbo on, or it could be something crazy. I got a air-cooled 911 I'm trying to restore. We respect any build. Anything like that to us is cool. If you're having fun and you're just enjoying the automotive lifestyle, shoot. We can get down with that.
Oh, yeah. Anything that you put time and effort into is, you know, respectable in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. It's kind of just one of the things we wanted to do. We knew we was going to be on this long trip. Nathan said, hey, why not podcast while driving? That's a fun idea.
Yes.
Us being us, laid back, no real main topic. I mean, it's been pretty busy for both of us. He's been wrapping up on this BMW pretty much all week. I've been doing all this race car fab research. So, we definitely live this lifestyle about as fully as you possibly can.
A little extreme in some cases, but hey, that's what it's all about.
Literally, like, Wednesday night, I think I fell asleep reading about tubing wall thickness for tubing a chassis. I fell asleep reading that.
Yep.
I'm like, oh. Before I knew it was like 11:30, I had to be up at 5 the next morning, and I woke up and I'm like, I get it now.
Yep.
Yeah, we're definitely some of the more hardcore enthusiasts, but it doesn't matter if you're just getting into this or you've been doing it forever. No matter what, it's fun. You're out driving, bombing back roads, and you enjoy your car, you're definitely one of us. Actually brought me to something hilarious I wanted to get to. Did you know that the 97 Integra that Acura obviously sold here in the States, cars that are pulling massive amounts of money now, and everybody will laugh immediately, that car had a seam welded chassis, right? But none of the 911 GT3s did.
Which one's the real driver's car?
Yeah, for real. And that's something I did not know until a opposite lock reader pointed that out, actually. Yeah, the 97 Integra Type R, and only the Type R, Honda/Acura went through all the trouble of seam welding the chassis on that car. But Porsche didn't do it with the GT. Like the GT3 Ryan Dunn wrecked, those were just spot welded cars. I don't know why, but I instantly had a massive amount of respect for Honda after I heard that. I don't know. I guess that makes me just appreciate the car. Yeah, they fetch, you know, 60, 70 grand now, but I guess you can kind of see why. Nobody was really doing that back then.
Yep.
Explains why they're so renowned for their handling.
They just plucked a normal Integra off the assembly line, said, oh, this one's gonna be special, started seam welding it up,
threw a real high revving engine in it, bam, Type R. And back then they were sold for a reasonable amount of money. God, that had to have really been something back then. The GSRs were lovely cars, but could you imagine driving those back to back? Wow, I would have loved to have been able to buy one of those new. Just one of those little fun, did-you-know trivial things that I kind of heard this week, and I was like, oh, no kidding. Odd little things you learn as you go on. some of the other fun little things that I guess I kind of wanted to brush on throughout the week. World Cup Finals is coming up for drag racing in Maryland. And Boostin' Performance has been knocking on the doors of Sixes for quite a while now. So I'm really hoping it happens.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts. If they can pull it off, it'll be awesome.
Yeah, we're here in the Ohio area, and it's been pretty darn chilly lately. Temperature's been in the 50s pretty consistently, so you got to think, if the air temperature's like it has been, and what the, you know, the DA they have out there, that will be the time that car does it. It's been a real tight thing between the DSM guys and these all-wheel drive K-Series Civic guys, because whether we like them or not, man, those Honda guys are putting it out there. There's some of those cars, I think, hitting like 7.3s now. They're kind of knocking on our door. So if Devin could go out there and crack off a 6 and an H-pattern manual, game over.
Yep. I just find it hilarious how every time that car runs, everybody, I don't want to say that they jump on a bandwagon, but the hype train is definitely there, and people are just like, oh my god, this car is so fast, and, you know, it's H-pattern, manual shifted, blah, 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 blah. And, like, this car has been running that fast for years.
Oh, yeah, it's nothing new.
Literally, the rear-wheel drive V8 manual record got set while Devin beat the guy that set the record. I mean, it's like these people are... I don't understand. The V8 guys... V8 is superior to four-cylinder, don't get me wrong. However, they're just... I don't get it. It seems like the V8 hype is way more there than the four-cylinder. But the four-cylinder is just like... blows everybody's mind, but it's been doing it for so long before the V8 guys have ever even been doing it.
The VA guys like to pretend that the H-pattern manual record is not held by a DSM, because any time this debate goes on, I will be the first to throw that out there. You know, they'll say, oh, you guys are racing these unibody all-wheel drives that don't necessarily work. And I, honestly, yeah, they are right. I mean, an all-wheel drive unibody is not the best way to go fast in the quarter mile. It's not. But I always throw out, it must work. Because the quickest manual car is a unibody all-wheel drive H-pattern car.
Yep. And
they will not usually respond back. they like to just pretend it never happened. But with that being said, I mean, he raced Garrett, a.k.a. Cletus McFarlane, in Leroy, which is an awesome build, by the way. And that was one of the most savage-ass beatings I've ever seen. I mean, it took Cletus like a week to put that video out, and he basically got like half-tracked.
I would be curious to see what the weight difference is between that, the Exo Corvette, and the Red Demon.
The Red Demon still runs steel quarters, a steel roof. He just went to carbon doors not long ago. But, I mean, that thing still runs steel quarters and a steel roof. It is still on. It's not a tube chassis car.
The factory unibody.
That is a very much a unibody car. And, yeah, I mean, he's been, I think, 704 with it. I mean, for the love of God, that tells you how good the unibody is. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you look back at John Shepard, who was cutting the 7.5, 7.6s. Jesus, 10 plus years ago. Yeah, his
2006, so almost 14 years ago now.
I remember watching it happen, yeah. And yeah, his 60-foot times were definitely not as good as, let's say, a high 7-second like Fox body. At the end of the day, it don't matter. The car is working. Maybe it's not quite getting out of the hole fast enough, and that's a misconception. Everybody thinks, oh, all-wheel drive on slicks, it's like cheating. No, it actually, there becomes a point where all-wheel drive holds you back. If Red Demon was rear-wheel drive, that thing would be deep in the sixes, honestly. But you got to give it to Devin, man. He is very dedicated to that setup. He put out a video, like, last week from FL2K. And he's been racing that car for 8-plus years. Talks about you know, having his 2G for the first time crack 14s. He keeps the setup simple, and he's very dedicated to it. That car's been in service 8+ years, and I can't wait to see it hit sixes. That's just something I really wanted to touch on, because that H pattern manual thing, that's a very heated, that's a very sore subject to some people. I think if he puts it in the sixes, I just don't know how long that would take to beat it.
Yeah.
It's going to take a hell of a setup to do it. You got to think, that's using an off-the-shelf PPG dog box. You know, it's not like you paid $100K for this transmission. You, the listener, could go out and buy this same transmission Devin runs for right about $7,000.
Kind of what he was bragging about as well, which is, you know, awesome for the fact of the guys in the DSM community that everything, 90% of everything that is on that car is off the shelf.
Off the shelf, yes.
And how simple it is, and that's, you know, he's like, why overcomplicate something when it works?
And that's where a lot of the DSM community does kind of lose themselves. You know, there was a big debate in DSM Nation the other day, it got out of hand, but a lot of these guys, you know DSMs can go fast, so, oh, I need custom this, billet this. No, you don't. And I agree with what one longtime DSM, you know, there's been a member in the DSM community. Oh, man, that's a clean-ass Omni sitting in a... Oh, that's sad.
Buy it. I want it.
Yeah, we should. On the way back, we should attempt to buy an Omni.
Damn it, the trailer's going to have a car on it.
Fuck it, we'll come back for it. But, you know, we've been in the community a long time, and one of the members that... I guess I always respected what he was doing. You know, it's the guy that set stock turbo records dating a decade back. You know, he had made a comment, if you haven't maxed out a 16G, should you be asking questions about building 1,000 horsepower cars? And I fully agree with that, honestly. Because a 16G can put in work. And if you don't know...
On 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean...
An auto car with E85.
I mean, shit, the member I'm referring to, Justin Achiel, who, you know, pointed that out, and I had to agree with him. That guy was running fucking 10s on a 14B, a stock turbo going 10s. And I'm very old school in the community. I agree with that ideology. If you've never maxed out a 14 or a 16G, you should. And you might realize that car is a lot faster than you think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my town...
Tune it to work.
My Talon pushes about 28 pounds out of a 16G, and I'll be the first to tell you, it's a rowdy ride. It's a lot of fun. That whole 1,000 horsepower thing, that takes a lot of work. It's real easy to get about 650, 700 out of these cars, but once you start going over that, it gets pricey.
Yep.
And that's why Devin said, you know, he maxed out a 20G. He maxed out a GT35, went 8.9s on a 35R. And I think that's a big part of why he's been so successful. Because if you can extract every amount out of a given setup, when you do move up, you know what it's going to take. You can't just jump into this 80mm turbo and expect to know how to drive it and utilize it if you've never done it on a 51mm turbo.
And I think a lot of, like, you see all these guys now, look at the Noonan's running 8s on an FP Black.
It's fucking lunacy when you think about that.
I think a lot of the tuning technology and tuning ideology from the V8 world was so far ahead of the 4-cylinders. They're just now catching up to, you know, all the stuff that you have to do to be able to make these cars powerful and to be reliable at the same time, and it's really showing through, I think.
It has come a really long way, for sure. I mean...
Because, I mean, it's still... You gotta think, DSM Link has been out for quite a while now. The V3, that has been out probably 10 years now.
I think it has, right at it.
And people are just now learning, you know... I mean, not just now, but a handful of people up until now are, you know... They kind of knew the way, but other people are just now starting to come into... knowing what you can do with this program, and I think that's a big thing that has held people back. They just don't know how to tune So it ultimately, when you're starting to put power down with these cars, they seem unreliable because the tune was so, you know, so far off.
Yeah, and that's a lot of kind of what I was getting to is, you know, instead of focusing on, well, how do I run a 7 and crack out 1,000 horse, you know, focus on making 350 and how do I tune for this 350? How do my changes affect this car's drivability? You know, how do I make this setup work on the street? And once you start to figure it out, it's all kind of common sense stuff, but like you said, the tuning thing has really started to catch up. I mean, could you imagine, even just 5 years ago, if you just said, hey, FP is going to come out with this stock frame turbo that bolts to a stock manifold,
right,
will retain stock air conditioning, power steering, literally speaking, you can retain everything the car came with on that turbo, and that turbo is now going 8s.
Right.
It's a bolt-on turbo going 8s.
You'd have got laughed at.
Yeah, people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? But it's been done. It's gone 8s. I mean, it is hard to believe, but yeah, she was on that show Fastest Car, and that car has gone 8s on that turbo, and that is just nuts, man. I remember builds that were going 8s just 10 years ago. That was like a 6-figure build damn near. Now it's like, well, do you know how to tune and do you have some money? You can make this happen.
Yep.
Just one of those kind of fun things. I mean, I'll always stand behind the DSM platform. Yes, can you put a Fox body in the 8s for far less money? Oh, yes, you can. LS swap and 2 China turbos and some management, that car will definitely go 8s. It's been done, I forget how many times now.
Right.
To do with the DSM is going to take a lot more dedication. But that's why these DSMs go to these street no prep events like out in Colorado, and man, they clean house. You figure out how to make that car work on the street, they are kind of untouchable. I always think to that white Auto 1G that was just waxing everybody until, of course, it broke. But yeah, he was in the finals on that 1320 video, and I forget what went wrong with the car, but that dude made it through a freaking like Pro Mod Chevelle, a methanol Nova, and this was an auto DSM just putting in work. I don't know. I guess I grew up watching that kind of stuff, and I've always respected these cars for that reason. Mm-hmm. There was a time Shep's car was still a street car going like 8s.
I don't care who you are, you can't deny the capabilities of a 4G63.
Oh, yeah. That's why I fell in love with them. You know, we grew up on these things and watched this platform evolve over the years. Yep. And that's why sometimes I still sit back and scratch my head, like, how did we get down to a 704? Remember Dave Buescher's Conquest going high 8s. And for any of our OG listeners, they're like, oh, dude, I remember that car. Shit had a Power Glide in it, and like a Ford 9-inch rear. That was a cool car to watch go. I mean, it ran 8s very consistently, but, you know, now the Noonans are doing it on a stock frame turbo. It's kind of ridiculous. All these platforms have come really far. Hondas are in the very, very deep 7s. They're doing those K-series all-wheel drive swaps, and you gotta respect them. They're putting in work. I think they've got an H pattern down to like a 7.5 now. So yeah, the V8 guys who are trying to chase the Red Demon, I kind of laugh, you know. Well, you gotta catch Hondas first.
Yeah.
The STI has been like 7.8 on a 6-speed. The Evo, I think, is down to a 7.7 or a 7.8, that Yorkies car. There's a bunch of our cars doing it. I think the fastest V8 rear-wheel drive is still in the 8s. We got STI, Civics, DSMs doing it. I forget who else. I feel like there was another car that did it, but yeah, just a little bit of drag racing, bench racing talk. We're coming up on about the 50-minute mark, so I think we'll go ahead and just kind of close out a little bit by saying, you know, we hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Just kind of a fun update on the project, stuff you guys need to stay tuned for, stuff we'll definitely be writing about on the website. Definitely watch out for that World Cup Finals. If you are a drag racing enthusiast, it's going to get rowdy. The best of the Hondas, the DSMs are going to be there. Definitely give it a good look. It's a lot of fun to watch and follow it. But this is Matt.
And this is Nathan.
Reminding all of you guys to modify, maintain, and drive your cars. Take it easy.
See you.